Hi, I'm Lila Alphonse, senior editor at Shine at yahoo.com, and I'm thrilled to be here in Washington today for this session of Open for Questions. I'm here with White House senior advisor Valerie Jarrett, who's the chair of the White House Council for Women and Girls, and with Preeti Bansal, who's a general counsel, sorry, stumbling over your whole title, general counsel and senior policy advisor with the Office of Management and Budget. And today we're going to talk about issues surrounding women and the workplace. Earlier this month, the White House released the Women in America study. It's the first comprehensive report of the state of women in America since 1963. And some of our readers are wondering whether either of you found anything surprising in that report.
Well, I think we both did. But first, Lila, let me just welcome you to the White House.
Thank you.
Tell you how delighted we are that you're
doing
this.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're hoping that everybody who is watching online is going to enjoy our conversation and will participate in the conversation, because a big part of what we want to do here at the White House is take time to engage people and make sure that they know what we're up to. In fact, as you know, I was just meeting with the president before I dashed over here, and he said to welcome you as well.
Oh,
and
I'm thrilled.
How important he thought that this report is. One, because it's, as you said, the first time we've gathered so much information. We're going to learn a lot from it. It's going to help guide many of the policies that will inform the administration, as well as, we hope, the business sector and the private, the philanthropic sector. So it's good for everyone. But it also tells us we have a long way to go. And so one of the things that surprised me, and obviously it, like Preeti to participate in this as well, is that still, although women have caught up in so many ways, we have young girls now have caught up with boys in terms of going to college, and they're now half the workforce, women are half the workforce, but we're still in this day and time only earning 75% of what men earn, and that's so extremely frustrating. Another thing that surprised me is some of the chronic illnesses that really that women have, and even though women live longer, the quality of their life is sometimes compromised by these chronic illnesses. I know we'll talk about that a little bit more later.
Well, I've been collecting questions from our readers at shine@yahoo.com, and during this live cast, I'll also be taking questions from our readers, well, readers and participants on facebook.com. So if you'd like to submit a question, please go to the White House Facebook page at facebook.com/White House. Marilyn, Preeti, I'm sorry. Could you weigh in on
that? Sure. I mean, I think as Valerie pointed out, the fact that women have made so many strides in education. I mean, women now outpace men in terms of basically all indicia of education, but yet within the workplace, they continue not to be there. And I think the other piece is just the extent to which women's income, these are not just women's issues, these are family issues, and the extent to which women's income really is important for family income, especially in our recessionary times, women's income has been an increasing share of making up the gap.
Well, what we found, interestingly, when our Council of Economic Advisors brought to our attention earlier, when we had a workplace flexibility conference here at the White House, is that now, two-thirds of all children are either in families where there's a single head of household that's a woman, or two working parents. And as Preeti said, particularly in this economy, those salaries are so important now to make ends meet, because so many families are dependent upon it. So it's a family issue, it's a community issue, it's a national issue. This is not just an issue for women anymore.
I think because of that, one of the things, probably the biggest question our readers had, was about the wage gap.
Yes.
Venus, Paula H., WB, and other Shine users asked, why do you think women continue to be paid less than men, even after all the other factors like seniority, experience, after all of those are also considered?
Well, there are a variety of reasons, a variety of different factors. One, and this is something that's been a priority of the president since day one, is that we have to encourage our young girls to go into fields that lead to profitable careers. And so encouraging them to go into science, technology, and engineering, and math. In fact, yesterday I was with the president in New York, and we visited a science fair. And I made a point of going over to the young girls and saying, you know, it is so cool to be interested in science. And I'm so proud of you to really try to reinforce that these are really, really good careers. A couple of weeks ago, I was at NASA. We have now women astronauts, and we had all these young girls who came. And what we really wanted to do at NASA is excite them about the possibilities of space. And so if they can see a career at the end of this tough educational road where they're going to have to work really, really hard, then we think that that will capture them. And so one is the fields that women are going into. Women are still carrying the burden of the family, and so 30% more time that they spend on family household chores, taking children and elderly parents to hospitals, caring for elderly parents, caring for children, and volunteering. This was something else that surprised me about the report. Women volunteer a lot more than men. Men spend more time on leisure activities, but they also spend more time at work. And so if you think about it in that context, women aren't able to spend as much time at work because they have all these other commitments and responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And then another factor is we still have discrimination in the workplace. The very first bill that President Obama signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Act to try to give women that added protection against discrimination in the workplace. And so part of what we've been doing here at the White House through the Council on Women and Girls is to try to highlight best practices. Best practices in the private sector, where we now have a report that the Council on Economic Advisors released that shows that actually employers who have flexibility in the workplace are more productive.
Flex time is something a lot of people are concerned about. In fact, several other users are wondering what you think, both of you think, that corporations, small businesses can do to make offices more family friendly. It seems a lot of the time that women are penalized for taking a lot of those perks that are supposed to make things easier for them.
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to talk to your workforce, and you have to really listen to what their needs are. Mm-hmm. And the most productive workers are ones who are happy and who are not feeling, I mean, everybody, I'm a single mom, and so I know when my daughter was growing up, I couldn't breathe if I was concerned about where she was. And so it's smart for the employers to really figure out what are the needs of their workforce. And one of the things that we're doing with the next phase of our analysis and our research is trying to really examine what are the needs of people outside of work, what are they trying to balance, so that we make sure that we're adopting policies that create the kind of flexibility that they need for this time in our nation's history. And the needs are different today than they may have been 20 or 30 years ago. Some may be the same. And every employer has to figure out how to meet their needs of, you know, producing products and services that are going to satisfy their customers, but also doing it in what works for their workforce.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add, I mean, I think one of the things the study pointed up was the extent to which flexible time is available equally to men and women currently. So again, the idea of flex work schedules is not only about women, it's about families and the choices they're making. Specifically with regard to flexible time. I mean, there's a role both for government and laws, and there's also a role, obviously, for the private sector, as Valerie pointed out. A lot of what Valerie's work and the Council on Women and Girls' work has been to highlight best practices that we can do partly as a federal government, but also to spur private industry. I mean, the private sector is recognizing more and more that retaining women is about competitiveness, and it's about making sure that you reduce the transaction costs when you have a lot of worker turnover. So I think the private sector is increasingly open to this notion, and they're looking for good models. Mm-hmm. And so part of what Valerie's work has been doing and the president's been doing is highlighting best practices in terms of flexible work.
Well, one other issue that comes up a lot when it comes to retaining women and when it comes to working parents, men and women, in the workforce as family parental leave, actually, maternity leave or parental leave, dependent care leave.
Yes.
Several of our readers were wondering why the U.S. is one of only four nations industrialized nations that don't offer it. Why is that a burden that should fall to the companies rather than to the government?
Well, one of the things that we are looking at and that the president is proposing is a demonstration program in states where we actually do fund paid leave. Because it is a big step to have unpaid leave, but that's not enough, particularly for families that are vulnerable in these economic
climates. Job protection as well.
And having job protection is also very important. So we have made some progress, but we need to make more. And so the president really wants to let states experiment to figure out what would be the best practices and what are the needs and what are the reasons why people need that flexibility? What are their outside demands? And I think Preeta was making a good point that I think is generational as well. When I talk to my daughter and her friends, and she's in her early 20s, the men have the same expectations as the women in terms of flexibility.
There was that report by Boston College last year about how fathers are finally coming to experience a lot of the same things that working mothers have for years.
Yes.
They're legitimized in one area of their lives, but not in another.
Exactly. And they're demanding more. And the women that they're marrying or partnering with are expecting to share more equally than perhaps my generation did. And so I think this is going to be an additional pressure on employers. And there are are many examples around the country of employers who have embraced workplace flexibility mm-hmm. and who realize that it does lead to greater productivity. And mm-hmm. so part of what we want to do is highlight those best practices here at the White House mm-hmm. and also challenge ourselves. And so the president has really directed the federal government to carry on some demonstration projects where right. we're looking at flexibility as well. And whether it's telecommuting, you're taking advantage of the internet, that we can now start to measure productivity as opposed to hours clocked.
Right.
And at a time when the federal government is so challenged and we're having to do more with less and tighten our belts, mm-hmm. just as families all around the country are having to tighten their belts, we have to do the same. And so we need to really measure how do we get the most out of a person mm-hmm. and not simply, you know, punching a clock necessarily.
Those are good points. Preeta, do you think there's also a budget angle to it as to why the U.S. hasn't made this kind of investment?
Well, certainly, there's always a budget angle to everything. And in these particular fiscal times, mm-hmm. I mean, as Valerie said, trying to do more with less is really the mantra. I mean, I think the president's initiative of funding the state pilot programs mm-hmm. will go a long way in terms mm-hmm. of demonstrating to us what will work and what won't. And then I think, you know, a lot of our budget policy for the past few years has been evidence-based decision making. So once we have examples of programs that work well and have an ability to evaluate them, then we can decide how and when to scale them up.
Great. We have a question from Elena via our Facebook page. Elena, this one's yours. She writes, women, despite having more education than men, continue to be underemployed and undervalued. Women have less to invest in retirement security and long-term care and also outlive men. Fewer women are marrying and having children. Who will care for women and their families as women age? Is that something that the White House currently has an initiative in the works for? Is that something that was addressed in the report?
Well, I think part of what we're trying to do is start at the beginning mm-hmm. and focus on girls. Mm-hmm. And let's put them on a path where they're going to have lucrative careers and that will lead to self-sufficiency, build retirement so that when they do retire, they aren't dependent. They can mm-hmm. take care of themselves. So mm-hmm. the long view is to really start with the girls and put them on this very positive trajectory. We do need to focus on senior care and elder care. More and more families, because people are living longer, mm-hmm. are having to share in the responsibility of caring for their elder parents because they haven't really had sufficient retirement funds saved up. Something else that we're focusing on here in the White House working with the Treasury Department is also financial literacy. Mm-hmm. The President created a council on financial literacy mm-hmm. and the goal is to really help people understand how to manage their finances mm-hmm. so they can plan for a lifetime mm-hmm. and plan with some flexibility. That's hard at a time of economic crisis, but hopefully as we come out of this, as we are coming out of this crisis, we can equip people with the skills that they need mm-hmm. to really make good financial plans that will last for a lifetime.
Yeah, and I would just add that, as you pointed out, women are living longer. Women mm-hmm. live longer than men. That's something our report showed. It also showed that they have more chronic medical conditions. They have right. difficulty walking. They have more chronic needs. Mm-hmm. I think the President's Affordable Care Act and his support of the Affordable Care Act ensures that women will have access to health insurance, mm-hmm. Even without spouses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important step to make sure that women are cared for mm-hmm. in their older age.
Yeah, we find that so many women don't have the kind of preventive care. They don't take advantage of preventive care that would avoid some of these chronic illnesses. They're mm-hmm. not getting screening. They're not getting mammograms. They're not getting pap smears.
Is that an issue of access or an issue of reimbursement?
It's both access and also reimbursement. And mm-hmm. so under the Affordable Care Act, a lot of those kind of preventive ongoing treatments will be covered. Mm-hmm. And so that'll create a real ability for women to have those kind of screenings so that they can avoid some of the these illnesses mm-hmm. that could be preventable. But as Preeta said, also, yes, making sure that they will be able to be treated for the chronic mm-hmm. illnesses that they have. And it's everything from, you know, arthritis to obesity mm-hmm. to depression, all mm-hmm. kinds of issues that are going to be challenges. And we need to understand them. We need to be transparent and open yeah. about what they are, and that's going to be the best way to tackle them.
Okay. Well, not only do we have more and more women in the workforce, we also have more and more women who own their own businesses mm-hmm. and who are trying to break into fields that are traditionally dominated by male-owned businesses, such as construction. So Shine reader Angela Jones asks whether the new women-owned business set-aside programs with the SBA are going to be announced and whether they're going to have certain contracts announced and how other people can take advantage of programs like that.
Well, I'm going to let Preeta go through the details, but I first want to give a real shout out to Karen Mills, our SBA mm-hmm. administrator, who is terrific. And not only has she really worked at expanding our programs and making them more accessible and more yeah. available and raising the limits so that businesses can take advantage of our programs as they grow, because so often what happens is that the federal programs are not available mm-hmm. at a time when you need them most. Right. And access to capital is a very, very important quality, that ingredient that makes a business successful. And mm-hmm. Karen has done a tremendous job of really opening up doors. She's going around the country and having programs around the country to get people involved so that they understand what's available at the federal government mm-hmm. and how we can help them. But maybe, Preeta, you would like to talk about some of the details.
Yeah, so we're really excited. This has been a huge administration priority to launch the Women-Owned Small Business Program to make sure that women have are on a level playing field in terms of getting federal contracts. Mm-hmm. And the first set of contracts under that are likely to be awarded in the fourth quarter of this year,
which is
when most of the federal contracting dollars go out. So we're happy that the program is in place for that to happen. Mm-hmm. I would encourage all of your viewers and readers to go to the SBA's website, which is www.sba.gov/WOSB, Women-Owned Small Businesses.
Great.
At that particular site, they have all of the information about eligibility, fact sheets about how to access federal contracting dollars, and a lot of the details about the program. Mm-hmm. It's something we're excited that women can compete for, and we encourage you to go to the site.
It's great to have that kind of initiative for small business, but there's still a disparity in the big business side of things. There's a huge discrepancy between the number of female CEOs and the number of male CEOs. And one of the Shine readers, Winsome McIntosh, wants to know what influence the White House is bringing to bear on the lack of women at the board levels of the corporate sector.
The reason why we're smiling mm-hmm. is that both Priya and I spent time in the private sector.
Okay.
I served on a number of corporate boards, and one of the priorities for us was trying to figure out ways of increasing the number of women who serve on the boards. And again, I'd make the same point I was making about workplace flexibility. It's good business to have diversity both on the board and at the mm-hmm. senior levels. Mm-hmm. Women bring something, a perspective to the table, mm-hmm. just the way people of color bring a perspective to the table. And in a global marketplace, and let's face it right now, all of our companies are competing in a global marketplace because of the way we're all connected now. And so recognizing that if you have diversity at all ranks of your company, mm-hmm. you're going to be more thoughtful, you're going to make wiser decisions, more informed decisions. And so part of what we do at the White House is try to highlight the best practices and explain to everyone why it's in their self-interest. Don't just do it because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Do it because it's good for business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just add, I mean, I think I'm happy you asked this question, because at the same time that the report was issued, the president issued a memorandum to all agency heads. Mm-hmm. And in that, he specifically addressed the need to spur corporate representation and representation of women at the highest levels of corporate governance. Mm-hmm. And part of what he charged was he asked the SEC to look at how they can use their existing data collections from publicly traded companies to ask information about women on corporate boards. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping that through this initiative that there will be increasing encouragement to start complying with that. And I would also add that the White House is leading by example. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have women at some of the senior most levels. We have Valerie Jarrett, who's a senior advisor to the president. Mm-hmm. We have a very strong Secretary of State. We have a very strong female presence on the president's cabinet. Mm-hmm. So in all of those ways, I think the president is showing that leadership by women is something that matters.
And he comes by this quite naturally. I mean, think about it. The president was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. He watched his grandmother in the workplace. She was a banker when there were very few women in banking, and mm-hmm. she hit a glass ceiling. And so he felt her frustrations. And he's married to a very strong and professional woman who had her own career. And he watched the First Lady really try to struggle between balancing the needs of her two small children and her responsibilities at work, and he saw how she struggled as well. And so I think this is in his DNA, if you will, and so he came to the job really committed to seeing what could we do to improve the quality of life for women and girls through all aspects of their life, from early on mm-hmm. through being senior citizens. Mm-hmm. And that's what the White House Council of Women and Girls is all about, pulling together all of the federal agencies and departments mm-hmm. and having them really focus on our programs and our policies and our initiatives mm-hmm. and what legislation we proposed to see how are we going to measure that against actually having an impact in improving the lives of the women.
I find it really interesting that you mentioned the struggle for work-life balance, because it's really less balance and more juggling act for a lot of people.
It certainly is, and keeping all of those balls up in the air, and you know you're going to drop one.
Half of mine are under the couch, actually.
Exactly, but where is that safety net?
There really isn't one that people feel.
It's not just the responsibility mm-hmm. of the federal government or, mm-hmm. or any unit of government. It's a community and a mm-hmm. societal responsibility, and if mm-hmm. you think about the future generation, the young girls and boys who mm-hmm. are in school today, what kind of a world do we want them to live in? We want them to be, all be able to compete on an even playing field. It's why the president has made such a priority of education and increasing funding for education so that our children are not just competing with themselves here in the United States. They're competing in this global marketplace again. Mm-hmm. We need to give them the tools and everything that they need to be able to compete effectively in this new tomorrow. We're a country that prides ourselves on innovation and new technology and being on the cutting edge so that we can invent, you know, the light bulb to the internet of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that our girls are not left behind is really a priority for this administration.
And you can't win the future with only half your workforce.
That's a very good point. Very good point. On Facebook, Connie Raza was asking what policies the administration would advance to support working families outside of the workplace. Things like affordable childcare, ways to encourage paid time off, ways to find ways for people who are able and willing to work to actually get back into the workforce.
Well, this is very important, and as more and more people have either exited the workforce because of the economy or because of demands in terms of their children or their elderly parents, we need to make that transition back as smooth as possible. And I'm going to let Peter go through some of what's in our budget, but I think what's important to keep in mind is this is really a priority for the president, because we do need to be able to have, at a time when people are changing careers, as we retool as a society and we look to the technology of the future. Today, the president gave a very important speech about energy, how we need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, how we need to invest in new forms of energy right here at home, whether it's wind or solar or electricity or nuclear, whatever the source of energy. We need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil by investing here. And so as we do that, we need to make sure that our workforce of tomorrow is prepared for that new technology. And so whether it's working with our community colleges and the private sector to make sure that the curriculum is designed in a way where people are being trained for the jobs of tomorrow, making sure, as we said at the outset, getting people to go into the fields such as science and technology and engineering and math. Oftentimes we find employers who we speak to can't find the workers to employ. And so here at a time when we have a shortage of jobs, we have employers who are saying they can't find the people with the skills that they need. Mm-hmm. We need to match those two up. And so that's a big priority of the president as well.
Priti, you mentioned you had some points from the budget.
Yeah, well, in terms of helping working families, I mean, there's the president's budget is committed to that. That's really, I think, part of the unifying principle behind all of the programs that we support. But the specific ones I want to just highlight is support for women, infant, and children, the WIC program.
Oh, great.
The president's budget adds a lot of funding for that at a time of tight budgets. There's a number of programs that help combat hunger, the SNAP program, and a number of the child nutrition programs as well. Housing assistance for families. So women disproportionately tend to be beneficiaries of public housing, women and children. So making sure that that safety net is there for families. So there's a number of ways in which the president supports working families, and the budget reflects that.
If you remember, just at the end of last year, during the lame duck session, the president was able to work with Congress to pass a tax package. And so not only did it provide tax relief to all working families, but it also had a child care credit in there. It had a payroll tax credit in there. It had a college tax credit to make college more affordable, because so many families today, as they're struggling to make ends meet, can't afford to send their children to college. Well, we want to be able to help them do just that so that they're really prepared again for the future.
Speaking of children, another reader from shine@yahoo.com, his name is DJ Phoenix, asks, well, says, many black girls attending schools in our urban cities are increasingly slipping through the cracks academically. And they're also increasingly exhibiting antisocial behaviors and other signs of extreme mental stress. They are in need of intervention. It's a common belief that they are doing better than African-American males, therefore they're all right, but that's not the case. He'd like to know if funding and special programs like those we see for African-American males, urban males, single fathers, Latinos, and new English learners will be created in support of African-American girls.
Well, taking care of our girls is a big priority, and you're certainly right that there are challenges and there are inequities that we want to, as I said, make sure that there is this level playing field that's so important for all of our girls. And girls of color, whether African-American, Latina, all have challenges that And I always say, there's nothing wrong with the girls.
No.
The kids are fine. It's the adults that need some work. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is to make sure that they are a priority and that the programs and initiatives that we have are reaching them. The First Lady has been tremendous at this, because one thing that doesn't actually cost any money is mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having dinner this evening with the mentors that we have here, young girls at the White House, mm-hmm. that the First Lady is inviting in. And she's inviting, as we close out Women's History Month, she's inviting in a group of remarkable women from around the country mm-hmm. who've been spending this afternoon at our public schools talking to the girls. And again, as I said back with the girls at NASA, mm-hmm. trying to get them excited and see the possibilities. And the First Lady is a wonderful role model.
Mm-hmm.
Here she grew up on the south side of Chicago,
right.
attended Chicago public schools, worked hard, and became the First Lady of the United States. And so she serves as a wonderful mentor. Well, we want to get more women involved in mentorship. Mm-hmm. And part of what our STEM initiative does, and Ursula Burns, who's a CEO mm-hmm. of Xerox, African-American woman, who is really leading this charge mm-hmm. and saying, let's go and bring the girls into our companies when they're young and let them see what the possibilities are.
That's wonderful.
And excite them and try to get them going for the future.
Yep.
So it's not just programs and spending money. It's also taking the time, and everyone who's listening can do this in your own community. Go to a community center, go to a school,
mm-hmm.
talk to a girl. One girl at a time, we can make a big difference.
Well, we're almost out of time, but if you've missed any part of this, the video will be up at shine.yahoo.com, hopefully later today, possibly tomorrow. Is there anything you'd like to add before we have to wrap up?
I just want to thank you again, Lila, mm-hmm. for your interest in this topic. It is so important that we engage everybody and that we really think and we're open to new ideas. And so if people have suggestions, you know, please email us and let us know what your thoughts are. We want to hear what everybody has to say and how we can
Great.
Really, as Preeta said, and as the president says every day, win the future.
Great. Yeah. Preeta, anything?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for shining a spotlight on this report. And we're very excited about the report. And what we're really excited about is I think it helps to start a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really looking for input from the public. And I would encourage you to go to the website of the Council on Women and Girls as well, which has not only the report, which you can download, but an extensive array of links to the federal government's mm-hmm. data sources.
And what is that website?
It's whitehouse.gov/CWG. And on it, if you click on the link on data, you'll see the report and you'll see a lot of sublinks that you can really drill down. If there's a particular issue that interests you about minority women, about education, you can really drill down to the individual stats. And the idea of this was to start a public-private conversation and partnership on these issues.
Great.
Thank you, Lila.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you all for watching.